Kalita.
Okay, Rabotai. After wishing everyone a good evening, if we could turn to page Kuf Tes Vav Omen Aleph. All we have to know in order to jump into this sugya is that on the previous Amud, we had a case where a person has only one vegetable, and that is Chazeres. He only has Maror. And the Gemara quotes Rav Huna, who says that he should make a bar pri adama on the first tibul, which is the vegetable for the meal, and then when he gets up to maror, he'll recite the blessing on the second tibul, on the second chazeres of al achilas maror. On the top of kuf tes vav, we find that Rav Chisda was unhappy about this because he felt that once you fill up your belly, so to speak, proverbially, with chazeres, with morah, now you're going to first make your bracha on morah, and therefore he wants both brachas to be on the first tibul. So it means that in a case we only have one chazeres, and it seems we paskin like Rav Chisda, that's the only vegetable you have, then what you're going to do is you're going to make both brachas on the first tibul. That's Bar Pri Adama and Al Achilas Maror. And when you get to the second tibul, which is the Maror itself, you're not going to make any brach at all. And Tosfos here on the top of the page points out that Rav Chisda holds like Rav Reish Lakish, that we discussed at great length last week, that mitzvos trichos kavana. And his kavana is to wait until the second chazeres to be mekayim the mitzvah of Maror because of the Al Matzah Umrom Yachlu. And therefore, it's very interesting that he's not yotzei the mitzvah of Mara with the first achil, and yet he's making a bracha on it. And Tosfos gives an example of tekiyos de me'umad and tekiyos de me'yushav, and you're going to make a bracha on the tekiyos de me'yushav, even though the real kiyum of shofar is on the second set of tekiyos. I'll say there Shmon Esrei. We spoke about the fact that bizman hazeh you can't eat matzah and mara together in order to fulfill both mitzvahs. That's called mitzvahs mevatlo zu et zu. And what that means is that since Mara bizman hazeh is only derabanan, then relative to matzah, which is d'oraisa bizman hazeh, berev toklu matzahs, Mara is like a reshus. It doesn't have the status of a mitzvah. So we'll only get to Korach, to Kricha, after we've already eaten matzah by itself and Mara by itself. We cannot mix the two. And then after you mix the two, then you're ready to do what, according to Hillel, was the minhag that they did back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, al matzos umarorim yochlu, when both matzah and mara were doraisa, and therefore both can be eaten simultaneously. So where did we get up to? The last line on Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amin Aleph. And we'll start a half a line before that. Amar Rab Lozom Rab Hoshia Kol Shetibulo b'mashke means any vegetable that came in contact with liquids. Tzarech netilas yadayim, you have to wash your hands before you touch the yerek. And the reason for that is because yadayim are shnios l'tumah, which means that yadayim are considered to be Tame. Again, it's called Shnios. We'd have to learn the laws of Tuma. Maybe I'll mention a few of those laws now, just to get a taste of it. And the law is that Shnios Lutum is Metame Truma. So back at the time when we ate Truma, when the Kohanim ate Truma, if the Yisrael would touch the Truma directly and that Truma was wet, then he would passel the Truma. And we're not allowed to passel Truma. Now, even though today we're talking about chulin, we're not talking about truma, but they made a gzera, and they equated chulin with truma, because if you're going to touch chulin, then eventually you might touch truma. And therefore, we need netilas yadayim. Now, this is a very interesting halacha, if we were learning Tumah V'Tahara, but what does it have to do with Arvei Pesach? And why did the Mesadrei HaShas place it right here? Can anybody guess why would we have a discussion here about netilas yadayim with regard to a wet vegetable on the night of Pesach?
You're going to have a wet vegetable.
Correct, exactly. That you're going to have to wash your hands before the first tibul, because the first tibul will involve placing the vegetable into water. And once the vegetable becomes wet, Now Yodayim are Shnios, and we're not allowed to touch these vegetables. And even though you might say that Bizman Hazeh, we don't have any problem of being Metame Truma, because everything is Tame, so the whole thing doesn't really apply. But nevertheless, on the night of Pesach, we want to be very careful, and we want to imagine what we would be doing back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we have the Afikom, and that's why we have the Kricha, that's why we're, according to some, that's why we wear a Kittel, because at the time of the Mikdash, they used to wear Kittelich when they ate the Korban Pesach, and all these other things. So we want to jack up the standard, and we want to imagine so today, if you would put a vegetable in front of me that's wet, I wouldn't necessarily wash my hands. It would be meaningful to wash my hands, and that would not be an act of yura or amaratzis, but generally speaking, people don't have the minig. But on Leil Pesach, that's when we treat this very seriously, and since the vegetable is being deliberately dipped into liquids, and that's called tibul rishon, we're going to wash our hands before we take this vegetable into our hands. So that's why this statement of Rabbi Elazar in the name of Rav Hoshea is codified here for the Leil HaSeder. Omar HaPapa, Shema Mina, let's derive from this halach of Netilas Yadayim, in the case of the first Tibul, the Hai Chasa, okay, now we're talking about the Marar, Tzarech L'shkue, which means you have to dip it, Becharoses. In other words, the halach of Netilas Yadayim applies that requirement not only to the first tibul, which is a yerek, but also to the second tibul, which is chazeres, which is chasa. And you might ask me, well, who says that your chasa, let's say you took romaine lettuce, how do you know it's wet? And the answer is, it became wet because you have to dip it into charoses. Why does it have to be dipped into charoses? The Gemara says, mishum kafa. Kafa is translated to Hebrew as eres v'charifus. We're talking about something, you know, if you don't have to think very hard to remember what the actual horseradish comes from and how it's prepared. It's something that's very charif, and it has a certain eres to it, a very pungent and perhaps even harmful acidic element to it. So we have to counter that by dipping it into the charoses. The charoses makes this chazeres, this chasa, into a davar shetibulo b'mashke. And therefore, it's going to require netilas yadayim. Now, I'm not saying that you need a netilas yadayim, because l'maisa you have a netilas yadayim. Which netilas yadayim do you have? You have actually two netilas yadayim. The first one for the first tibul,
and then for
matzah. So you had two netilas yadayim. The Gemara says the isal kedaitik lo tzarech lishkue. If there was no halach that the chas has to be dipped into charoses, netilas yadayim lomali. Why would you require netilas yadayim in chasa? Halo noga. In other words, if it didn't come in contact with the charoses, it's a dry vegetable. It doesn't require netilas yadayim. And even if his hands are tmeos, but nevertheless the mashke, in the absence of a mashke, it's not mukshar lekabel tumah. In other words, a yerek, in order to be susceptible to tumah, has to have contact with the liquid. So Gemara says, no, v'dil maliolam emel chol lo tzarech lishkue. It's possible that there's no requirement of dipping the chazeres into charoses. And you'll ask me, what about kapo? I mean, this very toxic kind of substance, you know, that comes from the very bitter herb. The answer is kapo mirecha mayis. The very odor of the charoses, it's a very powerful odor, that itself is enough to be mevatel the kapo. El lomali netilas yadayim. So now if you're going to argue that you don't need tibul in charosa, so why is it that before you eat the morar, you're going to wash your hands? And the Gemara says, dilma mishka'ule. In other words, even though the minhag doesn't require that you dip it into charosa, it could be that you might be tempted to go ahead and do so, because that's a way of, as we said before, of getting rid of the kapha, and therefore we made a blanket requirement that you have to have netilas yadayim. Okay, later on the Gemara is going to ask whether or not a second Netilas Yadayim is necessary since you had the first Netilas Yadayim. Okay, we'll get to that soon.
It sounds like from the Gemara that charosis is liquid.
Correct. A lot of people make charosis very, very solid.
No, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you buy charosis, it's like just chunk, you know, it's solid. Right.
But it sounds like
Aaron, if you ask me again off the records, I would tell you not to buy charosis. It's a mitzvah to make charosis.
Why?
I'll tell you why. And if you get a chance, you should go through the ingredients of charosis. I have a sefer that goes through it one by one. Each ingredient in charosis has a different symbolism. And I don't care about the commercially sold charosis. I want you to make your own charosis. You know, your wife might throw you out of the kitchen for that, but I don't know. But if she allows you to, it's really beautiful. I mean, half of these symbolisms come from Shir HaShirim and touch on the relationship between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's a different discussion. Again, the assumption in this sugya is that you're not eating the charosis. If anything, you might be dipping into the charosis, and maybe even that's not necessary, as we saw before. But the eating of the charosis, that would reflect the shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, and the Rambam already establishes that we don't paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. In fact, the Rambam goes as far as to say, I think I mentioned this to you, that according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, you make a separate bracha on eating charosas. The Amar Apopolo, Nishe Inish Marar b'charosas. If he does dip the mar into charosas, don't leave it there. Just dip it and take it out. Because Dilma, Agav Chela, because the charosas has a certain element of a sweetness to it, the tavla, because you add spices, is mevatale l'marusa. They'll completely negate and undermine the bitterness of the marar. Ube'inan tam marar v'leka. And we require marar that has a taste to it, and it won't have a taste to it. Now, by the way, it's very interesting that Sfaradim, even more than Ashkenazim, are into romaine lettuce. The reason for that is because the marar that we use, Ashkenazim, which is horseradish, well, not because of pikuach nefesh, although that itself is a reason why maybe we should use romaine lettuce, but above and beyond that, it has a certain bitterness that's very sharp, as opposed to romaine lettuce. But romaine lettuce is supposed to have, again, I never tasted this, but the experts tell me that it has a bitterness that's not sharp. It's pure merirus. It's a bitterness. Whereas horseradish has got a certain charifus, and that's what we discussed about before, that it has this charifus as almost like a toxic substance that has to be offset by charosis.
So it seems that the romaine lettuce is, in other words, people eat it year round in salads and they enjoy it. That it's like difficult. In other words, the idea that that's the murder of the night.
Yeah, very, very interesting. When I was a youngster, they were researching something called endives. Did you ever hear of it?
Sure.
Whether or not it's Morar. I remember the SOY, that was the student organization, the yeshiva wrote, I forgot who wrote it, he wrote a 20-page essay in, what were they called, Gesha, whatever they called the publication, just on the issue of endives, you know, its status as far as Morar is concerned. I remember my friend Rabbi Yilson was very excited about that.
What is endives?
I don't know, it's a kind of a very bitter vegetable.
Yeah,
or so.
It's a leafy
salad.
You should know the Yemenites have a whole different thing for Marar. I forget what it's called. It has an Arabic name to it. Advere Rav Chizda L'Ravina. In other words, Rav Chizda was guiding Ravina on some sort of a teal, some sort of a trip. And Ravina Ukva, that Ravana means the rabbi named Ukva, Vidarash. And he was giving him a drasha. And what did he tell him? He said, Natal Yoda B'tibul Rishon. He says, even though he already washed his hands for the first tibul, nevertheless, Natal Yoda B'tibul Sheni. And when this drasha was passed on, was transmitted to Rav Papa, Amrua Rabbana Kami to Rav Papa, he exclaimed, Habi Alma Itmar. This would seem to make sense during the whole year, Like, let's say, for example, you had one vegetable and you washed your hands because it was wet. Then they brought you out another vegetable. You have to wash your hands a second time. But this doesn't make sense on the Leil HaPesach. Why? If you're going to tell me that this halacha, that you need a repeat performance of the Netil Sidayim applies to the Leil HaSeder, is lovely Netil Sidayim Shei Zimni. There's no need for a second Netil Sidayim. Why? He washed his hands for the first tibul, and he's concentrating on the Haggadah and all the mitzvahs halayla. There's no reason why I should assume that he disconnected his connection with the original Netil Sidayim, that's called Hesach Hadas, and he got sort of sidetracked, and therefore he might have touched something which would mitame him. There was no Hesach Hadas from Shmiras Yadayim, and therefore we can assume that based on the first Netil Sidayim, before the first Yerek, his hands are clean. I would say just the opposite. Hacha itmar. The halacha that requires a second Netil Sidayim is specifically geared towards the Leil HaSeder. The isal kedaitav bi alma itmar. If this statement, this drasha of Rav Chisda was made in the context of the whole year round, why would he imagine that you're taking two different vegetables and dipping them? Because look at his language. If you go back to his language, he says, Natal yoda betibul rishon. And then he speaks about a second atila and tibul sheni. He says, if bi'alma itmar lomali tre tibule. On the contrary, that's why we stimulate the curiosity of the children, because we never have two tibulim on at the same time. Alayla zeshtei for amen. Elamai hochitmar. But rather, this statement, this drasha of Rav Chisda, was made with in the context of Leil HaPesach. Netil Sidayim treizim, and he needs a second Netil Sidayim. So the Gemara says Netil Sidayim treizim lovely. He already washed his hands once. Why is it necessary to wash his hands again? Hamashale yodei chadizimna. He washed his hands once. Amin. The Gemara answers kevan deboy lemeimar agadita vehalila. Dilma asche asuche asche lidaite vinoga. He is so fatifed, he's so dedicated to the study of the Haggadah. And here our text of the Gemara adds Hallel. That's a little bit problematic because Hallel comes later on. But the first part of Hallel is integrated into Magid, so he's probably referring to the first half of Hallel. That he might come to Mesiach Das. He's not paying attention to where his hands are roaming, and he might actually come in contact with something which is metamehin. And therefore, dafka on the night of the Seder with his two tibulim, he requires a second Netil Sidayim. Again, halach l'maisa, this is not really relevant because as we said before, he's got the Netil Sidayim before the matzah. So when he gets to the morrow, which is right after the matzah, he doesn't need a third Netil Sidayim. But theoretically, let's say he would not have matzah or something along that line. Then he would certainly be required to have a second Netil Sidayim.
Could it be that the order was different at the time?
This I don't know. It's possible.
Just going back to the Mara for a moment. Is there any issue of mixing the halacha l'maisa, mixing horseradish and romaine lettuce
I don't think so. They're both.
And then you've done the mixture properly.
Yeah, there might be. You know what? It might be recommended. I'll tell you why. Because when you swallow the mara without something that separates it from the palate, it could really be
overpowering.
It could be so. Yeah. Forget about dangerous. Let's say it's not dangerous, but it's so. It has such a harifus, a sharpness to it, that I'm not sure if you're going to get the real flavor of bitterness. You know, you want the bitterness, not the sharpness. In fact, I'll ask you a different question. I have a good idea. Why not take maror and just swallow it without chewing it? So the Gemara is going to say that the problem is, that's the next line of the Gemara, Omar Rava Bola Matzah Yotzah, Bola Mara Lo Yotzah. Then in the case of matzah, if you want to swallow a piece of matzah, if you could somehow do that, let's say you chop it up into a small piece and you swallow it, that's okay. But if you swallow marar, that's not enough. Because in marar, you have to have what's called tam marar b'fiv. Al matzos umarorim yochlu. The Torah says, v'yamaru es chayem. We have to remember the merirus that we suffered, our ancestors suffered in Mitzrayim. And if you don't experience that merirus when you eat the marar, then you're not yotze. And I know that's going to ask, you know, that's going to lead us to the question about romaine lettuce. It doesn't taste so bitter. But again, bola marar lo yotza. Bola matzah is yotza. So you see, the Gemara holds that b'liya is considered a maisa achila, but it's not going to be good enough for marar because marar needs tam matzah b'fiv. Tam marar b'fiv.
Seems the fiddish to say that matzah doesn't require any level of taste.
Because the symbolism of matzah is not connected to its taste. Bala matzah umarar, if he swallows both of them together, yidei matzah yotzi yidei marar lo yotzi. So Tosis right away asks, what's the chiddush over here? You just finished telling me that bola matzah yotzi. You finished telling me that bola marar lo yotzi. So if you eat them together and with one blia. So Tosis says, the chiddush here is that we're not going to apply the principle of bittul. You remember that we discussed that if you combine marar and matzah together, is the marar is mevatel the matzah. Here says Tosis, ein omrim. We're not going to apply the principle of bittul. Bittul only applies when you chew something, and you chew two different substances, so you're not really tasting one of the two substances. And if the marar cancels the taste of the matzah, then you're not then that's called bittul. But in the case of blia, where you're swallowing it without chewing it, there's no bittul. So, according to Tosfos, if Liya Tzuyer, you had no possibility of eating the marah first and the matzah first and the marah second, and there was only one possibility of eating them both simultaneously, then what you would do in this case is blia. So, at least you would be yotze the mitzvah d'oraisa of matzah. You would forfeit the mitzvah d'rabbanan of marah. So, I'm not sure what you gain by that. You know, the best thing would be in such a case probably just to eat the matzah alone. And then chew it, and eat it like a mensch. You don't have to do blia. But it comes out according to Tosfos, a very interesting chiddush, that if there was blia without le'isa, then Tosfos says there's no principle of bittul. Karcha, now what happens if you wrap up the matzah or the marar? So the question is a question that's called chatzitza. Have you heard that word chatzitza? How do you translate chatzitza in English? Chatzitza, how would you translate it? A separation?
A barrier,
some sort of separation. Like, for example, one of the mitzvahs that becomes very practical and very common before Pesach, even though it's all year round, is called Tefillas Kelim. You need to buy new pots and dishes for Pesach. You have to take them to the mikvah. So one of the things the post can tell you is to be very careful to take all off those labels, those stickers, because otherwise it'll be a chatzitza. So with regard to chatzitza, you have the following principle. Min b'mino eino chotzeitz, min b'sheino mino chotzeitz. So when you wrap up the matzah, the question is, what did you use to wrap up the matzah? Like, for example, a person who's ill and has to take a pill, let's say on Yom Kippur, or maybe it's a chometz problem if it's coated or whatever on Pesach. So what the poskim will encourage is that he wrap up the pill in a tissue of some sort. That makes it into a chatzitza, so it's not called an achila. There's no direct contact between the foodstuff and his palate. But that's because a tissue is called min v'she'eno mino. And min v'she'eno mino is chotzeitz. I mean, they're two different substances. But if, let's say, on Sukkot, you have this very often, that you wrap up the aravos and the hadasim around the lulav, the question is what substance are you using? Because if you grab them and the law is that you have to take all four minim, then it might be a chatzitza. So we apply the principle of min b'mino eino chotzeitz. So if you take, you know, they have something called kaishalach here, from you take it from a palm tree, from a lulav tree, so that's called min b'mino eino chotzeitz. Again, there are various issues, but some of the briskers, you'll see they don't use kaishalach. Right. You know, they don't even want to get into that whole issue of chatzitza. So what did you wrap? What did you use to wrap your matzah? I'm not sure why he did this, but it says besiv. What's a sieve? The Hebrew translation of a sieve is klipa gidola. It's some sort of a piece of the dekel tree that is a hard substance and it's not edible. And if it's not edible, then it's called min b'she'eno mino. Ubalon, and then he swallowed it, is in such a case, even though we established that blia in matzah is okay, here, af yidei matzah nami lo yotze, he can't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah because of the law of chatzitza. Here we have a case of min b'she'eno mino chotzeks. What would be if he covered his matzah with something that's edible?
Chocolate covered matzah.
Yeah, so that would be min b'mino, and min b'mino is eno chotzeitz. Here it's a case of min b'she'eno mino, and therefore it's chotzeitz. Omer Rav Simi Bar Ashi, matzah lifnei kol echad v'echad. Now keep in mind that unlike our tradition, our custom, in the old days, each person had his own little table. And it was important, therefore, that every single table be equipped with a matzah, and for that matter, lav dafka matzah, but anything that has to be eaten on this night. Why? Because otherwise, you know, each person is eating on a different table. So let's say there's one person who's leading the Seder, and he's going to have to guarantee that after he makes the bracha on the matzah, and he's the only one who has matzah on his table, he's going to have to give out the matzah to each one on his table. Today, we all eat from one table, so it's less of an issue. But the Gemara has the minhag of each person having his own table, and therefore the Gemara wants to guarantee that every single person at the Seder, who's now eating from his own personal table, would have matzah. Then it says, marar lifnei kol echa v'echa. Each person should have marar. And when it comes to charoses for the dipping, charoses lifnei kol echa v'echa. But now there's another mitzvah on this night. That's called akiras ha-shulchan. We want to get the children to ask questions. So what we do is we actually remove the table. Again, today we don't do that. It's too much of a tircha to remove the table. So what we do is we take the Seder plate and we cover it, or we put it on the other side of the table, whatever we do. But in the old days, they actually used to take away the table. And they didn't even eat the meal yet, so the child was meant to ask, why are you taking away the table? We didn't even start the meal. But the halacha is that even though each person at the Seder table eats from his own table back in the day, only the one who's leading the Seder, that's the Akiris HaShulchan. Because again, the whole purpose of Akiris HaShulchan is to stimulate the curiosity of the children. All the eyes are on the leader, so to speak, who's reading the Haggadah, and therefore it's enough to stimulate the curiosity of the children if we move the Shulchan that is in front of the one who's reciting the Haggadah. By the way, you should know when the Rambam codifies the laws of the Seder, he always consistently speaks about the Kore Es HaHaggadah, which seems to indicate that in the Rambam's frame of reference, only one person read the Haggadah. Everyone else listened. In my family, for example, everybody recites the Haggadah. Yeah. But the Rambam didn't have that minhag. And the reason for that is because Barov HaMadras Mila. You know, we all link together to sing the praise of God. It takes on a whole new dimension.
They didn't have so many books at the time.
That might be true. I don't know. I'm not sure if that would make any difference, because keep in mind, the Rambam is codifying the halacha for all generations. So when he speaks about Kori Es HaGadah, he means business. You know, not just because they didn't have the HaGadah. Fine, so the Akiris HaShulchan is Lifnei Misha Omer HaGadah. And that's enough for the Heker to get the children to ask questions. Rav Huna Omer Kula Nami, he says that even the matzah, the mora, and the charoses, there's no need to place them in front of every single individual table. El lifnei misha omer ha'agadah. And that's fine. He'll give it out. He has all the matzah, all the mora, and so forth. He'll share it with others. He doesn't seem to be concerned with the fact that, you know, the bracha is made, and until you eat it, it's going to take a while till you give it out. The Hilchasuk Rav Huna, the Gemara Paskins like Rav Huna, that's okay. Lama okrenes ha-shulchan. The Gemara wants to know, why do we take out the shulchan? Amri debei Rav Yanai, kideshi akiru tinokas v'yishalu. What's happens before the meal? You're already taking away the table. It's a little bit odd. Abaye Avi Yosef kami de Rabba. You know, Abaye was born without parents, and he was raised at in the house of his Rebbe Rabba. So he was sitting in front of Rabba. Chaza de kamadli tacha mikame. He saw that they were lifting up the table in front of Rabba. Amaluhu, he was wondering about this. Adayin lo kachlinan, we haven't eaten yet. Asu kami akre tacha, the tacha is a shulchan mikamon. You're taking away the table? Hey, that's not fair. We didn't even eat yet. Amalei Rabba patrasan milomar manishtana. You've already asked one question, and all we need is one question. Right? The halacha is that if you have a son who's a chacham, he's supposed to ask manishtana laila zeh. He notices that there's something strange going on in this night, and why is this night different? And even if he doesn't have a ben who's a chacham, then he has to ask himself. But Abaye asked the question to Rabba. In all honesty, he didn't understand why they would take away the shulchan. He wasn't familiar with that. And at that point, all that Rabba would have to answer to him is, Avodah Vayinu L'Farah B'Mitzrayim. And at the very moment you ask, why is this night different? And why are we doing strange things? Then I can already get into the whole issue of Avodah Vayinu. We were Mishtabi B'Mitzrayim. And now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. Omar Shmuel, Lechem Oni. The Torah in Sefer Devarim calls matzah Lechem Oni. Now watch. The word Oni is a reference, literally translated as the poor man's bread, because it doesn't have a vav in it. It has a cholam, but it's a chaser vav. It means you read it oni. But if you add a vav, and in Hilchos Torah Sheval Peh you can do that, because the cholam is just a replacement for that, for the letter vav, then it reads onim. Oni is miloshen aniya, which means to respond. Lechem sha'onim olav dvarim harbe. It means that we're going to recite the Haggadah, we're going to recite the Hallel, and all this over the matzah. My Rebbe used to tell us how makpid his father was that the lechem be there during the Magid, meaning the matzah should be there. And you'll see in some Haggadahs it says that they cover the matzah, and so that the Moshe Salvech didn't have that. You know, he had an open matzah because lechem oni sha'onim olav dvarim harbe. And then the Rav wanted to add a chiddush. Rashi mentions not just Haggadah, but Hallel as well. And the Rav said that Hallel, according to Rashi, is an integral part of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's why the matzah has to be there when he recites Hallel. That's why we have a fourth cup of wine, which is the kos of Hallel. All this is because Hallel is an integral part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, what's interesting here to me personally is I find that there are two dimensions to Lechem Oni. One is that it's the poor man's bread, and we'll soon see the Gemara is going to derive halakhic conclusions about the fact that it's a poor man's bread. And number two, it's also got another interpretation. It's called Lechem Oni because of Onim Olav Dvarim Harbe. My Rebbe used to tell us that not only is the matzah there for Onim Olav Dvarim Harbe, but even the Kos Shel Yayin, because the second Kos is called the Kos of Magid, the entire Haggadah should be recited over the Kos. And if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, the Rav is Makpid to hold the Kos for the entire Magid, which is a long time. You have to have steady hands for that, otherwise you spill the wine. And then the Rav said that almost every Leil Pesach, his father, as the Rav of Chaslavich, used to get the same question. And what was that? Nishfach Hayayin. What happened was that sometime during the Magid, somebody pushed the table and the wine spilled. So Moshe was very makpid. He says, in such a case, you have to fill up another cup and start Magid from the beginning. But who has time for another Magid? I mean, we're starving. We're waiting for the Knebel. So Moshe became like, Lahavdil, don't take me literally, a conservative Jew. And what he would do is he would give you an abridged form of Magid. In other words, he decided, based on his lumdus, which are the key, absolutely indispensable segments of Magid. And he would require you to say that. He would cut out a lot of pieces of Maggid because you've already recited Maggid. Some poor guy has got to do another Maggid because the cup spilled. So give him a break. And therefore, I remember the Rav used to tell us that very often on the Leil HaSeder in Haslavich, the door would knock. You know, there would be a knock at the door. And somebody would ask one of two questions. Either he found a bubble in his matzah, meaning that they didn't bake the matzah properly and there was a bubble. Or they would ask Rav Moshe because they found a grain in the soup. And the question is that chametz? And then the Rav used to say about Rav Moshe's father that he used to take the matzah on the Leil HaSeder and dip it into the soup. Why? Because he ilafuke from the chassidim. Because the chassidim, you know, don't eat kibrochs, which means anything that, any liquid that comes in contact with matzah. And Rav Moshe held, based on the Vilna Gaon, that there's no such thing as a possibility of chametz. By definition, once it's matzah, it can never become chametz. And therefore, he would go out of his way and dip it in. Very interesting, you know, back in Haslamich, it was a lot different than what it is today anywhere in the world. Anyway, so now the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a Braisa, Lechem Oni, Lechem Sha'onim Olav Dvarim Harbe, Dovar Acher, another interpretation of Lechem Oni, Oni Ksiv, which refers to a poor man, and therefore Ma Oni Shadarko Beprusa. What happens is the poor people can't afford full bread, so they go to the bakery and they say, give us your broken pieces. Sometimes they get it for free, or they paid a pittance for it. That's what a poor man can afford. Here we get the broken pieces.
You get the broken matzah.
What do you say?
You get the broken matzah.
And he would get the broken matzah. Therefore, we have to break out. By the way, most of our matzahs are broken anyway. I don't know. Every year I have this problem. I want to go back.
Another way of understanding that is that they have a regular piece of bread, but they, because they're poor, they put a, they break the bread and they hold on to the bread for later.
I mean, they say they had small, they didn't want to eat it all up at the same time. They wanted it to last long.
Not knowing when the next, how their next, where their next meal is coming from.
So they wanted to stretch it out.
It's always stretching. That's the, stretching it out. It's not that they go and get a broken piece. They buy the same.
Is that true, by the way, only on a, meaning, is that true on a, on a physiological level or just on a psychological level? Meaning, if you have X number of calories, do you get more for your body if you stretch it out? Or it's just psychological?
I understand it more psychologically.
Psychological.
When you don't have money in your pocket and you're not sure.
It's the same amount of calories either way.
You don't know where dinner is coming from. No, you're not counting calories, you're counting your money.
No, what I mean to say is, can a person, let's say, let's have in the Holocaust, right? So if I get a potato, will I live longer if I split up the potato and I eat it in small portions? I don't know. Well, maybe that's just a psychological element.
Told you.
I have to ask the scientists.
My father always pointed out the Kiddush Holocaust survivors often would take like a kichel and put it in a napkin and put it aside for later. Because
just that's what they did.
That was that mindset of not
being
having,
in the house.
Even though they had you know, they had food at home, but somehow this idea of like putting it aside. That's another way of understanding this line, is that what the Yoni's doing.
Right, he's breaking into small pieces so that he only,
not knowing where the next meal is.
Sons of Ripa never used to take, he never used to eat the bread from Wednesday until Friday, so that you'd have leftovers.
Yeah, unbelievable. And for matzah itself in the Holocaust.
And then he would still invite people to come and share with him in the Lesher Mishnah.
Right.
That was the sense of it.
Those were the days. I mean, the mysterious nefesh for matzah, I mean, it's his stories from the Holocaust that are just mind-boggling. It's the heroism in the edge. And it wasn't even halachic, really. It was just that this was what was, oh, that was what made life meaningful. You know,
it was kept him going.
Life was basically meaningless. It was just miserable, and they needed something to keep them going. And you know, just even if they would put their lives into danger, they'd rather be shot, you know, to death, going, you know, running around for a matzah or a shofar, rather than live in those conditions and have a meaningless life. I have a Haggadah from the, it's called the Holocaust Haggadah. Do you have it? I have to dig it up. I have it. It's a very thick, very...
What do you mean, the Holocaust?
It's called the Holocaust Haggadah, and basically...
It has stories.
Stories from the Holocaust. It's a very thick piece, a gigantic.
Wow.
I have it at home. If you remind me, I'll bring it in.
I want to see the Charoset section.
That I can show you too. That's Weingart. I forgot the name of the sefer right now. It'll come to me, but his name is Weingart.
What is this? What do you think?
He lives today. He's a Yerushalmi, and he tells you exactly not only how to make the charoses, but
all the meaning
behind it, all the symbols. It's like unbelievable. Remember, I get very excited when I
leave pieces of cinnamon in it. Also, that there's, remember, I remember they're like,
and there's a possibility.
There's one of the cinnamon sticks that you keep them. All these different minhagim.
Yeah, there's so many different minhagim. Okay, let's make a little progress because I want to really. The next mission is really a major, major chunk of the. Of preparing for Pesach, so let's move on. Is Afkan Biprusa? Now our minig is also to take a shlema. So Rav Salvez used to say, "I need the shlema in order to contrast the prusa with the shlema." Others say that I need the shlema for lecha mishnah. The Rambam holds that there is no lecha mishnah on Leil Pesach because of this din that we're learning now of lechem oni biprusa. Dovar Acher, and this is very fascinating. The Vilna Gaon was into this business here. Ma darko shel oni hu masik v'ishto ofa. He, the husband, would turn on the oven, you know, light the fire, and she would bake, she would prepare, you know, the matzah and then bake it in the oven. Is Afkan here on Leil Pesach hu masik v'ishto ofa? So I mentioned to you before that the Gaon was very heavy into this. The Gaon was makpid to personally bake matzahs. And baking matzahs, you may know, if you're not a professional, is a whole to-do. It could be hours of work. But the Gaon would take out of his precious time for this because he held that this halach of lechem oni, that you have to bake your own matzah.
We did it last week. Interesting.
What do they do? They rent the place? Or?
Yeah.
And how many matzahs do you come out with, by the way? I'm just curious.
Well, it depends on how many people you are and how many time you have. Right. How much time you have.
Because I know my friend Rabbi Ilson used to tell me that sometimes he would spend 9 hours and come out with 3 matzahs. Like, yeah. And I wanted to yell and scream. I mean, 9 hours of Rabbi Ilson's learning is not posh. You know, yeah. See that he gives up that for 3 matzahs. And I don't even know if they were royal achila. They were burnt to a crisp.
The other rabbi bakes his matzahs on the day of Pesach.
Yeah, the misnagdim are sort of nervous about that because
if it's so brilliantly done.
Yeah, you saw it.
No, my friend was his personal doctor and used to get 3 pieces.
All right, let's. I just realized. I want to just get to a certain point. Okay, fine. Now we saw that the Tanakhama says that we bring charoses. And we put it on the plate of the person who is reciting the Haggadah on behalf of everyone else. There's no mitzvah achila as opposed to a blazer of tzaddik. Is afal pisha ein charosis mitzvah? In other words, even though there's no mitzvah to eat the charosis, but there's a mitzvah to bring it to the table. So the Gemara asks, what's the mitzvah to bring it to the table? The ilo mitzvah. If there's no mitzvah like Rabbi Elazar of tzaddik to eat the charos, mishumai maisili, why do you bring it at all to the table? And the answer is, we already know the answer to this question, because the Mar needs the charoses. Om Rabbi Ami, Mishum Kappa. Kappa is some sort of a, as we said before, a harifus, a very sharp taste of the maror, which has an eris to it, has some sort of a toxic substance. And I don't know if it's a physical substance or a spiritual substance, but somehow by dipping it into the charoses, that detonates the power, this harmful power of the kappa. Omer of Asi, you know, Rav Ami and Rav Asi were contemporaries, and they were both students of Rabbi Chia, of Rabbi Yochanan, I meant to say, is kappa de chasa chama. In other words, if a person will get sick as a result of the eres, this toxic element in the chazeres, then what's his refuah? He should eat a tznon, a radish. And then the Gemara says, kapu de chama, if somebody now ate a radish, and there was a certain very sharp taste to the radish, then he needs a refuah, he's got to eat karti. Who remembers what karti is? We have it as the simon on Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Leeks, I think they're called. Okay. And then kapha de kulu, but if you want one refuah that's great for everything, chamimi hot water. This is interesting. Because we used to make fun of the old people that they drink hot water, you know, but the Gemara says that's a healthy thing. Ada hachi uhachi. But while you're waiting for the water to heat up, name a hachi. You gotta say a whole some sort of spooky stuff. You have to talk to this kappa guy. You know, he's some sort of spiritual demon of some sort. Kappa kappa de kirinoloch vilashav benis ulatamni kaloseh. I remember you, I know you, I know your seven daughters, I know your seven daughter-in-laws. So if you take a look in the footnote here, he quotes the Sefer Aruch of Reb Nosson, one of the Gaonim, and he says that E.F. Shalafarish, do we have no way of understanding this Gemara? This is a lachash, this is some sort of secret, spooky kind of lechisha that we say, and we don't know how it works, just go ahead and say it if you're really
interested. Because that's a mystery too.
Right. Apparently here, since it was
done appropriately.
Yeah, what's the word I want to use? It was mandated by the Chachamim. It's Rabbi Elazar of Tzadik Omer mitzvah, that there's a mitzvah to eat charoses. My mitzvah. Why is there such a mitzvah? At least in the case of Morar, we know that it's a zecher to the Morar Doraisa. So why charoses? Is Rabbi Levi Omer zecher litapuach? Now, when a woman would give birth back in the time of Shibud Mitzrayim, she would give birth under a tree called the tapuach tree. So that we want to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to protect these, you know,
Nashits of Kanyas.
Yeah, but what's the word I want to use? A Yoledis, how do you call Yoledis in English? A giving birth woman, but there's a word for it. What?
The doula.
No, the doula is the one who helps, but not talking about the woman who gives birth. Okay.
A woman in labor.
And, yeah, beyond labor, I mean, say, yeah, fine. So what we do is, We bring out the charoses and we put something into the charoses that has a kind of an apple taste. A lot of people put apples in the charoses for various reasons, but one reason is because of this idea of tachas atapuach. Rabbi Yochanan Omer zecher litit, he says the charoses should look like cement. Okay, should have that brownish kind of almost liquidy element to it, because we should remember the tit that Klal Yisrael had to use in order to make bricks when they built the Ari Miskinos Leparo. Omer Abaye Hilkach, therefore Tzarch Lekiyue. In other words, it should have some sort of Dover Sheshbo Kiyui, a little bit of a sharpness to it, like certain kinds of sour apples, or even wine, for example, has a certain Kiyue to it. How does he translate the word Kiyue in English there? Does he call it sharpness? You don't have it. Okay, forget it. It's not important. It's tzarech l'smuche, and it should be sort of solid, almost congealed. And why is that? Zecher l'tapuach, because apparently when you mix, I'm sorry, zecher l'tit, because when you mix it, it becomes kind of congealed, and it has a certain substance to it. It's not just liquidy. That reminds us of the cement. Tanya kavasi the Rabbi Yochanan. We have a brisa of zecher l'tit, and that is tavlin, that we should add into the charoses certain kinds of spices, zecher l'teven, because the word tavlin is made up of the same three letters as teven, which they used, Klal Yisrael used to add the straw into the cement when they made the bricks. The charoses zecher l'tit, and this brisa supports Rabbi Yochanan that the kiyum of according to Rabbi Elazar of Tzadik, the mitzvah of charoses is to remember the cement. So it's interesting, if you have matzah, morar, and charoses as three mitzvahs halayla, two out of the three at least are reminiscent of the suffering and the shibud. Even the third, which is matzah, could arguably be as lechem oni, reminiscence of the Shibud. So that's very interesting how far we have to go. You know, we say maskil bignus and v'sayim b'shvach, that the element of remembering the shivud is so critical on this night. Omer Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik, kachayu omrim tagrei charach. These were the sellers that used to stay, they used to stand near the windows in order to, you know, they pass by your window and they said, hey, this is what we have to sell, Shem Yushalayim. Bo utlu lachem tavlin lemitzvah. This was very famous in Yushalayim. You know, it reminds me back in Poland when they wanted to wake you up for slichas, you know, on the week before Rosh Hashanah. Here they used to say, before Pesach, they used to yell out, Bo utlu lachem tavlu lemitzvah. We're selling tavlin, come and take and buy for the mitzvah. Alright, the Mishnah says, Mosgin lo, Mosgu lo kos sheni. Now we're up to the coast of Magid. Vekan haben shoel aviv. And this is a little bit odd because, you know, you're hoping that the child will come up with his own question, but now you're sort of, you're programming it in that just at the time when they're ready for the second course, that's when he should recite, you know, the Manishtana. The aim das beben, if the son is not clever enough, observant enough to ask the question, is ovid malamdo, his father should teach him to ask the question, Manishtana laila zeh mikola lelos. Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that there really is only one question. We think of it as four questions. There are four different subsets, all of which are enhancements or embellishments of the one single question, and that is Manishtana Laila Zeh. And now we're going to prove and demonstrate how this night is different, and then we're going to ask the question, why is this night different? And keep in mind that this Mishnah was written at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, so we have the Korban Pesach. Kol Los Anu Ochlim Shar Yerakos Halal Zeh Moror. Or some have the girsa of Gakmara. Kol Elosanu Ochlim Basar Tzli Ubasar Shaluk. We're allowed to cook meat, make a stew. But Halayla Zeh, but on this night we take the meat and we roast it. We're not allowed to stew it in a pot with water because there's a separate Isur Lav with regard to the Basar HaPesach of Bishul. Shebechol Elos Anu or Einon umat bilim afilu pamachas halayla zesh tepe omen. Well, if he died, so there's no question here about Mesubin, and it seems that the question about Mesubin came much later after the Churban Abayis, and they replaced the tzli with the question of Mesubin. Well, if he died, shall ben aviv malamdo. Rav Soloveitchik used to always tell us on this section of the Mishnah that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim of Higadot L'Bincha is essentially a mitzvah Talmud Torah. And Talmud Torah, the overriding principle in Talmud Torah is Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darka. And the Rambam goes into great detail about this point. You know, he says that young children, you can't talk to them in abstract terms about concepts of slavery and freedom. They're not capable. You have to really concretize it. You know, you have to point to someone who's a slave or a servant, and you have to say Ke'evit Zeh Keshiv Chazu. That's called Lufidaito Shel Ben Aviv Malamdo. The teaching has to be appropriate for the child. But one thing is absolutely critical for the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and this has nothing to do with Lufidaito Shel Ben. This is standard and uniform, and that's the parasha of Arami Ovid Ovi, the Doresh, the parasha of Arami Ovid Ovi, Ad She Yigmar is called a parasha Kula. Now this parasha is in where? Kitava. And what is the subject of that parasha? Bikurim. Has nothing to do with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. In fact, there's no source whatsoever, other than the Mishnah, that would prove that parsha has anything to do with Leila Pesach.
It does describe the...
No, I'm saying that parsha, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to read that parsha. The Vamarta parsha zu, right? The Torah says there's no source that this parsha should be borrowed for the mitzvah CPTs Mitzrayim. So Rav Soloveitchik used to say that since the essence of CPT Mitzrayim is Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah requires that we learn Torah Shabbat Sav, or more accurately, we read Torah Shabbat Sav, and then we learn it in Torah Shabbat Peh. So the Mishnah looked for some parasha in the Torah which would give us the entire essence of Yetzias Mitzrayim and would allow us to read Psukim in Torah Shabbat Sav and interpret them al pi Torah Shabbat Peh. Where did they find such a parasha that would give us the insight into Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? And that's the parasha of Bikur. Arami Ovidov.
That you can do with the Psukim and Shmos as well, that argument.
Not really. You can't find one particular... In other words, you can go on and on and on, but it's not in one parasha.
Why does it be from a single parasha?
Because whenever there's a mitzvah of Kriya, it's always a single parasha. And that's why the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is made up of three different parts.
It's not a mitzvah of Kriya, it's a mitzvah of Sipur.
But the mitzvah of Sipur in Torah Shabbat Peh requires Kriya. Every mitzvah of Talmud Torah requires Kriya. We start with reading Psukim in Torah Shabbat Sal. We choose a parasha, and then we dash in the parasha. You can go through many, many different parashas and then interpret it. But there's only one parasha that gives you the entire quintessence, the essence of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Rav used to tell us that Rav Natroi Gaon was asked the following question. Again, the Gaonim lived about 11 centuries ago, more. And he said, what do you say about the following thing? I'm just going to read the psukim in Arami Ovidovi without interpreting them. So the choice says that not only aren't you yotzi the mitzvah, but choshed atove enai lios min akat shal akaroyim. The karoyim were those who rejected Torah Shabbat Peh. The fact that he would read the parasha without interpreting it, that made him into a choshed of karoyim. But other times the Rav would say a different shot. Why do we read the parasha of Harami Ovid Ovi? He would say that the essence of the mitzvah of Sipur is Shevach Vodoya. We're going to soon see that in the Mishnah with regard to Avodim Ayinu Tzienu Misham, that that's Shevach Vodoya. And that's why Halal again is an integral part of the mitzvah of Sipur. And moreover, that's why we have to read the parasha of Bikurim. Because the parasha of Bikurim is all about Hakaras HaTov. It's all about Shevach Vodoya, thanksgiving and gratitude to Hashem for everything He did to us from the beginning of time until we became a free people where we left Mitzrayim. And that's why it says, Achi Yigmar Kola Parsha Kula, because when we read a parsha, we have to read the entire parsha. And since in Bikurim...
We don't read the whole parsha.
We don't read the whole parsha?
No, we stop short.
Well, this I didn't know. I mean, there's another part of the parasha about Eretz Yisrael, if that's what
right,
you mean.
Right,
but this parasha is, I think it's a stuma, if I remember. The Mishnah says, Hachi Yigmar kol parasha kula. So if you have a kasha, you have a kasha on the Mishnah, which we'll have to work out, but not when we have to go to Meirim. But I just want to say the following. The Pasuk says, V'anisa v'amart l'fnei Hashem al-kecha rami ovid ovi v'yered mitzrayma. And that we have to darshan the entire parasha. That's the mitzvah of Sipur. So I'm both say next Wednesday, Mitzvah Hashem, same time, same place. It might just be our last meeting, but we're up to the Gemara here. And that's more or less going to get us to the famous Mishnah of Rav Gamliel.
Does it go to the end of the parasha? Or, in other words, what's considered the whole parasha of Arami basically?
But where does it end?
Because it doesn't look like it ends here. It looks like it goes on.
Right. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says,
Kola Parsha.
Kola Parsha Kula. I have a footnote here. Maybe he addresses your question.
Hi.
He says, I don't know how this is an answer, but he's definitely trying to answer your question. He says, Kachi Nidreshes B'Sifri, that in the Sifri, this is an entire parasha. I don't know. Your question is better than the answer, so I don't know.
I think it's a good